Hello, this is Christopher Long.
Denise Durmus.
Axel Carrera.
John Dolan.
And we are Liberal Arts Voices. Welcome to Liberal Arts Voices, episode 43. And today we are talking about love and sex.
All right.
Serious business.
It's about time.
More specifically, the philosophy of love and sex, mm-hmm. which is the name of Phil 14, Philosophy of Love and Sex, which is one of our most popular philosophy courses on campus. Draws students from far and wide. I wonder why that is, actually. Not that students have
you
sex.
You still wonder.
I know, and love on their mind. And
what is off the mind, I guess.
And that's all very high-minded.
That's right.
One of the reasons why we're having this podcast on this subject today is that we're getting ready for Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. Thursday.
Yeah. And also, over the summer, we have a lot of sections of Philosophy 14, Philosophy of Love and Sex, offered at the college. So we want to sort of talk a little bit about what the course is about and hopefully invite many people to register for it because it's a really great course. So now, you two have both taught this course before, right?
Yes.
And Axel, you've taught it face-to-face?
I've taught it face-to-face in summer 2 session last year.
And how did that go?
It went well. I mean, I also TA'd for the course a couple of years ago. I mean, I think probably more like 3 years ago for Professor Shannon Sullivan. I think the reactions that you usually get are pretty much similar. You know, the students come in with a number of set ideas, and the first one is, you know, we are going to talk about love and sex. So they're not really very much perhaps prepared, but definitely the kind of philosophical questioning that takes place isn't really what they're expecting at first. So it's very entertaining to see the first reactions. Oh my goodness, why reading Freud? And then, so that's the first set of reaction to the course. And then after that, and that's the most entertaining part of it. And it's not only entertaining for the instructor or the professor, yeah. It's also very entertaining for the student as well. It's just, you know, the sudden demand of, you know, re-examining all the beliefs mm-hmm. and about sex and about love. Mm-hmm. You know, you suddenly are exposed to things you've never heard about. Right. You know, a lot of students haven't know about transgender mm-hmm. people, but they haven't really been exposed to the kind of struggle or the kind of, you know, their both their emotional and sexual lives.
And so
There are a number of things, and I think that's what makes the course so popular, mm-hmm. is that, you know, you are for the first time exposed to an array of questions that you never would have thought about,
right.
had you been just part of, you know, our regular society, which is, you know, at some point, on some level, quite sexually homogeneous, you know, in terms of our beliefs, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. Having to deal with all these questions and having to, you know, the best experience for an instructor, I think, and also for the student, is to see the student suddenly having to let go of old beliefs and having to, you know, and wrestle throughout the course with new experiences and coming out at the end of the class and telling you, you know what. You know, I always thought this, but this is crazy. It's totally changing
right,
my
life.
Right
now, I think something else.
Yeah.
Right.
So
that's great. How? What's a normal class size? I imagine it's fairly small. I mean, when you taught it.
Thought it was 35 students, okay. So you have the couple of people that would drop. But the good thing with this class is so the topics are so controversial,
right,
that people get, you know, controversy is always great to keep up the attention level,
sure.
in class. So
yeah.
I usually don't have that many drop right. people, I mean, the people dropping the classes. So I would say usually we'll end up the class with 30 students.
Yeah, yeah. So that's small enough to have good dialogue.
Absolutely, and, yeah. That's the great things about summer classes.
Right.
Yeah. Now, of course, we also have Love and Sex online. Yes. It wouldn't be good if we didn't have an online
right.
component to Love and Sex, right? So, Dennis, you've done the online version, right?
Yes,
so
I've done
that. Yeah. Tell us a little bit. The dynamics there must be a little bit different.
Yes, it's certainly a little bit different, but there are very similar things as well. So I taught the class last summer in the second session. And the expectations were very similar, as Axel said, that, yay, we are going to talk about sex. That's awesome. And the one student even honestly said that, I was hoping that we are going to talk about sexual positions.
Oh my
goodness. Like, we are not. That's kind of disappointing.
It's not a manual. Although I'm sure you can point them in the direction.
That's right.
They could read it.
Further reading. For further research.
On
reserve.
So there's a little bit disappointing because we started reading Plato and Hegel, but at
How
the
can
end
you
of
be
the
disappointed
worry,
with Plato? Come on.
As opposed to sexual positions. And then,
I can see how you could.
And then we start, the class starts, and it's the, I have taught many online classes, and it's the most alive discussions that's going on in an online class. I think the advantage of taking this class online, not advantage, but the difference as opposed to a residence class, is that we are talking about lots of controversial issues and issues that people may hesitate about talking about in public, in a classroom setting maybe. But in the discussion board, you know, you have your name, but you're not speaking in person.
Right.
So they felt quite peaceful in talking about whatever they want to. And they were very, you know, honestly talking about their love life and sexual life and relating those to the readings we have read and discussed. So, and very interesting stuff came out, very, really interesting discussions throughout the semester, especially when we got to the last book we are reading, Sally Tistelli's Talk Dirty to Me, where she talks about, you know, prostitution, pornography, masturbation, things that, again, we don't normally talk about in a classroom setting. And they, the discussions got even more, you know, alive, and it's what the students liked the readings a lot. And as we were reading that book, they started to understand how important to have those, you know, philosophical background we built at the beginning of the class when we read Plato, Hegel, Freud. And they start to relate all those things, and things started to settle down. So it was really a wonderful experience, both for me and the students.
Yeah. So one of the things we should just mention is that you two, there's no mandated sort of readings that we have in the philosophy department for this class. So the class will vary a little bit depending on who's teaching it.
Yes.
But what doesn't vary is that these conversations happen and they unfold in really interesting ways.
Yeah, I imagine the online version might help people that might feel a little more inhibited about sharing this kind of stuff in a resident instruction class and maybe saying things that they wouldn't have said otherwise.
Right.
So,
and also, I think in some ways, having the time to think about how you're going to formulate or say what you want to say, and yet in the face-to-face version, I think there's a real advantage of having the dynamic give and take, being able to see reactions.
Yeah.
Did you feel, Axel, that people are hesitant to talk about, you know, things at first, or do they come in? Do students come in just ready to talk?
I think actually it's surprising that students, I think in my experience, have not generally been inhibited. You know, they've been quite open. And one thing that I don't allow in the class is any sort of disrespect. Because you know, there's always room, especially with these delicate themes and topics, to actually voice certain position that may be that may make the classroom unsafe for a number of people.
Right.
So, but that has never happened. In fact, there has been like really great. Like, for instance, when it comes to topics like bisexuality, intersexuality, or porn, pornography, prostitution, homosexuality, even something like homosexuality where you think, you know, we don't talk about, you know, this is not even a question of debate anymore. You know, we've gone beyond that. We've passed those limits.
Right.
But you not believe how much discussion it actually still, you know, stirs in the class.
Right.
So, but never have I had a student you know, disrespect another or hurt another.
That's great.
It's been really, really great place to voice your... I mean, there's been a number of disagreements. That's what makes the topic so controversial, or the discussion so controversial sometimes. There's a lot of disagreement, but it's always, you know, fairness and respect is always there. So my summer student have always been great.
Well, one of the things, I mean, we value not only in the sort of liberal arts education, but particularly in philosophy, is, you know, openness to position to other positions, to sort of trying to understand and imagine your way into, you know, the way and the position of another person, and then to sort of do that with that and reserving judgment as much as possible. So I think this class is great for that, to give students a real sense of, well, there's a huge range of possibilities out there in terms of how love and sex get expressed in human nature.
Certainly, yeah. Actually, one thing that class really fosters is critical thinking, especially the essays. They write, students write a number of essays, I believe, in all the sections, in your section as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the essays has to be in a certain philosophical format where, you know, they support a thesis, but they also answer counter thesis and an antithesis to that thesis. So students have to involve in a type of critical discussion in their writing as well, and this helps them to develop their writing too. Yeah.
And that cultivates, you know, what I talk about in terms of ethical imagination, right?
Yes.
You have to imagine
the
opposite position of what you are arguing
for
just to be able to really articulate it effectively.
Yeah, I think the other thing that the other thing that it trains, you know, it's a type of training to ethical exchanges within civil society, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not always, that's what makes democracy, you know, we're not always going to disagree, oh, wow, that's a Freudian story. we're not always going to agree with each other, but you know, these, because of the nature of the discussion, or the nature of the theme, you know, there's, you know, it's really filled with disagreement, you know, but I think it trains the students quite well on such a delicate topic to exchange, you know, in a very civil manner. So I think in that way it trains them for the world outside.
Dennis, you mentioned that you've learned a lot, kind of, about, you know, the way students think about love and sex. What kinds of things have you guys learned from just talking about that subject with them in this academic setting? Are there general things that you sort of think about?
One thing that stood out is their experiences of, for example, pornography and masturbation. Some students started to examine their own practices of pornography or masturbation. That, for example, some students said that I used to feel ashamed of masturbating, but now, after having those discussions and reading all those texts, I feel a little bit better about it. It's just maybe it's something normal.
There's something therapeutic about this class.
Yeah, there's something therapeutic. And there were some students who were quite harsh about pornography, that, you know, that it should be certainly, you know, it should be illegal, that we shouldn't have access to it, things like that. And some other students who were, you know, just said, oh, I just watch pornography and I enjoy it pretty much. And the discussion between those two types of students was very interesting. And I think it affected, influenced positively both types of students who had different points of view.
Yeah, mine, actually, one of the biggest one is the type of double standard between women and men,
right,
when it comes to love and sex.
Right.
You know, women are supposed to be, you know, really not allowed to do certain things that men would just, you know, get away with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of double standard that that's surprising, that in fact today, you know, students who were born in the 90s.
Right.
Like, you know, there's still that stuff with double standard.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Girl has to be proper.
Yeah.
She has to date, you know, in a very proper manner.
Yeah, she can't be aggressive.
Exactly. She can't be aggressive. She can't have multiple partners. Please
mm-hmm.
no.
Right.
And so on, so on. So that type of double standard also transpires in their... in their ideas and beliefs about certain kind of sexual, what's the word I'm looking, work or professions,
right? Yeah.
Like prostitution and so on. So there's a sense in which like female prostitution is actually more accepted than male prostitution,
mm-hmm.
for instance,
mm-hmm.
or even the kind of the female reaction to Teasdale's argument about prostitution, which is an argument for, you know, the legalizing prostitution,
mm-hmm.
right? Where she says, well, it's a profession like any other profession, right? Let's look
mm-hmm.
at it.
Mm-hmm.
So the my female student would be kind of like really uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
it's unsettling, and the guys would be like, well, yeah. You know, like, so there's, but when we talk about male prostitution, then things completely change,
right?
Right? And in fact, even further, I mean, there's things that you notice and that they're mind-boggling, and like homosexual male prostitution is more acceptable than the other way around, then, you know, male prostitute who would have, you know, sexual encounters with female,
right.
only, or and when we come to, you know, sort of like kind of bisexual practice of that profession,
mm-hmm.
oh my goodness, guys don't, hail breaks loose. so these are the kind of idea,
mm-hmm.
the kind of and set the kind of this process of unsettling sedimented ideas that the course gives us a chance to do as instructor,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's a discovery for us. Like every time I learn, you know, I was born in the early 80s, 1980, and I'm thinking 15 years, you were born 15 years later, you still think that? Like, really? That was me. That's my generation. We should have moved on to the next thing.
Well, one of the things that I'm sure the course brings out is this long history that we have
right.
with these issues and
right.
how they're bound up with gender stereotypes
right.
mm-hmm. and how there's, you know, a certain kind of view of women as passive, as having to be, as you were saying, proper. But there's also a long tradition of women as sexually aggressive, certainly in ancient Greek time when
mm-hmm.
the sort of, you know, certain view of women as manipulative and sexually aggressive
mm-hmm.
and that's, and desiring of sex
mm-hmm.
all the time, right? That's a figure that you find in all kinds of comedies
mm-hmm.
in ancient Greek thinking. So, I mean, there's this long kinds of traditions that
mm-hmm.
we're born into
mm-hmm.
and that we inherit, you know, uncritically
mm-hmm.
and then they play themselves out.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. So one of the question that, you know, we look at in the class is how love and sex how our conception of love and sex have changed from the beginning of Western philosophy
mm-hmm.
to now, or how these ideas have remained the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so in fact, you realize that paradoxically, you know, Plato's Symposium is so radical in many
right.
ways
mm-hmm.
today
right.
with young 18-year-old, 20-year-old students.
Right.
And then they're shocked by it.
Right.
You know, some are shocked by the content, some are shocked about the kind of, you know, freedom
mm-hmm.
that you read, or at least you experience while you're reading it, and so on. And you think, oh, and this was written when? Right. So it's very like this great moment of, it's constantly a surprise, and mm-hmm. every day, and you think I taught this every day, and it's right. constant every day, it's a surprise.
That's great.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a terrific class. I wish I had taken that when I was an undergrad.
I mean, yeah, it gives you the sense of, I mean, well, one of the things that's great about it is that it really reminds us that all of the human experience is a possible object of theorizing and discussion and critical engagement, critical reflection, right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, even the most sort of private, secretive kinds of things, things like masturbation and other things that people do, are phenomena that can be investigated, talked about, thought about in new ways, and it's great to hear your experience with this class, because you know this is exactly the kind of thing we want our liberal arts students to be exposed to in the course of their education. So you know. If you want to think about love and sex all summer long, you know.
plenty of opportunity to do so.
Plenty of opportunity to do it.
In a very philosophical and intelligent way.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. We'll post along with this podcast the link to our course offerings over the summer where you can find Philosophy 14. We also, John, have some other course offerings in liberal arts that we're... Yep. That we're trying to at least make students aware of.
Yeah, we've created a very specialized, searchable website that has all of the liberal arts courses being offered this summer, both in residence and online. So it's very easy to search and find what you want.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us for this discussion.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
This has been Liberal Arts Voices.